Good morning and welcome to Faith and Family. My name is Liz Hoffman. I'm the host of the show. Faith and Family is underwritten by our friends at Concordia University, Wisconsin. So we'd like you to be sure and check out their website and all the great things they have to offer. We have a link to Concordia on our website. It's kfuo.org. And we're wrapping up the first week of our show. The subject is State of the Family in Today's World. Now, remember, you, our listeners, get to be a part of our show, and we'd like you to call in or email your questions and comments for our expert. You can call in or email anytime. During the show, the numbers are 314-505-7850 in St. Louis or outside of St. Louis, 800-730-2727. You can also email at any time, family@kfuo.org. So let's get started with today's topic, which is State of the Family in the 21st Century from a Counselor's Standpoint. We've got another wonderful expert to share her knowledge with us today. She's a counselor, a mother, a wife, and she's been a partner in the mental health and wellness for over 15 years. She's nationally certified licensed Christian counselor with experiences in areas of couples and families in crisis, abuse survivors, trauma, relationship, communication difficulties, and more. Her name is Mrs. Marty Lindfedt. Marty, thank you so much for being a part of Faith and Family.
Well, thank you for having me, Liz. I appreciate being here.
Well, it's an honor to have you for our opening week as a guest. And happy Friday, by the way.
Oh, I'm glad it's Friday. Are you?
Absolutely. I'm just hoping that this weather forecast is wrong. We have snow coming to St. Louis.
We've had enough.
I agree. Absolutely. Marty, you have seen firsthand how so many families in today's world are in need of professional help in overcoming their challenges. Can you tell us how you, being a Christian counselor, would describe the state of the family in this modern world?
Oh, my goodness. Families face so many stresses, and I think that, you know, we pray that God is and Christ is still the foundation of our families, but culture really intrudes in a large way. And so I think I see strong families, I see a lot of weak families, a lot of families that are just struggling with what they face day to day and trying to stay united. And I don't think that what we see in secular media, TV shows, music, things of that nature, really support a strong family. And that's kind of sad. You know, we see disrespect among generations, you know, just broadcast in silly ways on TV. We see the gift of sexuality used as a joke. We see parents kind of made laughing a laughing stock for the sake of a joke on TV, and then we hear a lot of lyrics in music that glorify violence and glorify things that are contrary to what the Bible teaches. So I think that creates a big challenge for our families, and because I am a clinically trained Christian counselor, not all of my clients, but most of my clients have a faith base that is similar to mine, and they want very, very desperately to make sure that their families are strong and built upon their Christian principles, and they're challenged.
What would you say some of the issues are that people are commonly seeking counseling on?
Well, depression, stress. We live in a very high stressed time. You know, we're stressed in all ways. Clinical issues like anxiety and eating disorders. People come in who experience grief and loss. And I think because we live in what I frequently refer to as a drive-through society, you know, and if you can't fix it quickly, well, you know, just throw it out. That they don't realize that there are certain things that don't repair in 10 seconds. You know, you can't just go to another link and it's all going to be better. You lose somebody you love and that sting is going to be with you maybe for your whole life as you learn to regroup and readjust. So they deal with a lot of normal things, communication issues, parenting concerns, transitions like, you know, job changes and moving, and then disorders like ADD, anorexia, bulimia, addictions, more serious mental health issues, and how that impacts a whole family system, and the impact of trauma and violence. I see a lot of survivors of sexual abuse, and that's a very sad thing, but that, you know, I'll have somebody who come in to speak with me who's maybe 50 or 60 years old and was abused as a child, and they're speaking about it for the first time. And then, you know, natural disasters. We have a snowstorm coming, and that's going to create stress, hopefully nothing else. But here on the campus of Concordia Seminary, over the years, we've deployed seminarians to help with Hurricane Katrina. And when there was a counseling center here, we debriefed them afterwards. So, you know, everything that families deal with day to day, that's what a counselor will experience.
Do you feel like there's enough people that seek professional counseling, or perhaps are they a little too ashamed?
That's a great question. And people are still, even though I would like to believe that the stigma attached to seeking counseling has changed, people are still very reticent in a lot of cases to seek counseling. Even my own children, and I've been in this business for a long time, have silly names for me, you know, mama the shrink, you know, things like that. And I tell them, you know, counseling is really for people. It's for normal people with normal problems. Sometimes we see things that are extreme and clinical, but everybody's going to face problems. We live in a fallen world, and people are very reticent. They're hesitant. You know, we promise confidentiality because people need to know that what they talk to a counselor about is private, and that is going to be privileged, and that they need to have that confidence. So, yeah, people are very still hesitant to seek counseling. And a lot of people, you know, I will have a lot of people come into me to tell me that their relative, their husband, their wife, their friend, their neighbor needs counseling, but certainly not them. And, you know, so how can I help this other person?
Sure.
So, yeah.
You know, and it seems all too often that people may feel they can fix their problems on their own. How does that usually turn out?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, when we're focused on ourselves, we have a pretty narrow perspective. And so God places other people in our world to not only give us a different, you know, to reflect, to be a mirror for us. He gives us, a lot of times we neglect going to God for our problems.
Right.
You know, and trying to figure out what the Bible tells us as to how we're to, you know, proceed when we have a conflict with someone. And there's, you know, clear guidance, and God provides also the tools of other people in our world, of medical doctors and psychiatrists and psychologists and clinical counselors and you know, a whole host of blessings that that are at our fingertips.
And I would imagine that one major area would be marriages.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
How would you describe the typical marriage these days?
The typical, I don't know if there is a typical marriage, first of all. I think that most marriages are stressed. I wish with my heart that couples, engaged couples, prepared for marriage with the same intensity, the same focus, and the same passion that they use to prepare for their wedding service, ceremony, event, whatever they call it. Sometimes it's not really a ceremony, it's an event.
Absolutely.
But most couples don't put that much work into preparing to be married and, you know, studying one another with regard to how do we communicate? Do we listen to one another? You know, are we on an emotional high where we can't even really see whether or not we have enough money to pay our bills for a month? You know, things like that. Do what do we bring into our families from our families of origin? Is it complementary? Is it going to create friction? So I think families are stressed. I predominantly work with families who, couples who have a passion for their marriage, because, you know, in my bios, it says that I'm a Christian counselor.
Right.
And yet, you know, they come in with very broken relationships, sometimes behaviors that if they were watching themselves on videotape, they would probably grieve how they treat one another. You know, sometimes we get so far from the guidelines we have in Scripture, even though we profess our faith, that we forget that it's important to be kind to one another and to stop thinking long enough when someone else is speaking that I'm not planning what I'm going to say next, you know, while they're trying to communicate with me. So I think, again, I said this a few minutes ago, culture presents a very great challenge to marriages.
Is it safe to say that the root of many marriage problems stems from a lack of allowing Christ to be at the center of that relationship?
Oh, my goodness. I think a lot of times it's hard to get ourselves out of the way, you know, and even for those who love Christ, we get ourselves in the way because we have egos and we have vulnerabilities. You know, Larry Crabb wrote that wholeness cannot be achieved apart from Christ. And so I think that, yes, absolutely. Christ, when we get rocked off the foundation of Christ, and that happens very easily, we're in turmoil.
And in a world where divorce it seems like it's a cure-all for the marriages today. How do you counsel these couples in working out those differences?
Well, I'm connected to a group of counselors called Kaleo. And Kaleo is a group of individuals who are all clinically trained, licensed counselors, and some are actually in training themselves. But we're all Christian. And so we prefer to refer to ourselves as marriage preservationists. So while some secular, not all, but some secular counselors might see divorce as, you know, something that's very near on the horizon among the things from which you select to, you know, when you're helping a couple, for the folks that I work with, it's way out there. I'm not going to say that it's never an option, because often it is, but it's never the first thing. It's way out there, and we work hard to help couples develop skills so they can live together well, so they can preserve their marriage, so they can restore wholeness if brokenness has occurred. And that sometimes that occurs from how they speak with one another, you know, from letting anger fester and boil over. Sometimes it develops because there's been an affair, and some marriages can recover from that. Not all of them, but some can. And so that is the first focus: is where is Christ in the middle of this marriage? Is he at the center? How do we glorify Christ as we help you, perhaps renew and refresh that sense of joy that you had when you first met one another? And that's one of the most enjoyable things that I think that I'm privileged to experience, is when I ask a couple, so tell me how you met.
Mm-hmm.
And almost always their eyes light up, and you see them just go down memory lane with the recollection of what it was that drew them to their partner in the first place. And it renews the spirit of the affection that they have for one another. And that's, you know, we come back to that. So when you tell me how you were drawn to him or her, sounds like you felt like God was drawing you to him or her. And then we've got someplace we can go. You know, we can help them maybe replace poor behaviors with healthy behaviors, and remind them that how they treat one another is a powerful model for their children, if they have children. and it teaches that son or daughter what to expect from their own husband or wife, but also how to treat their spouse for the future. And when I think of that, that's very humbling. And it reminds me, you know, God does have a plan for my marriage, and it includes my husband. It also includes how we demonstrate what it is to be a couple for our children. Oh my goodness, you know.
Very well said. You're listening to Faith and Family here on KFUO. We're talking with Christian counselor Marty Lindvet. If you have a question or comment for Marty, maybe perhaps about your own personal struggles or a question for her, give us a call, 800-730-2727, or email us, family@KFUO. We're going to be addressing those coming up real shortly here. You know, Marty, I've heard stories from some people about their marriages, and some are, it's just an awful relationship filled with verbal abuse and downright hatred.
Yes.
Is there times whenever you actually do feel that a divorce may be the best solution?
Sadly, yes. There have been times, particularly when there's abuse, when somebody is not physically safe, when a child is not physically safe in the home, or a spouse is being beaten, when they're being abused emotionally. The encouragement first is for them to find safety. Oftentimes, the dissolution of the marriage will follow that if there's not a change in behavior by the person who's perpetrating the abuse. You mentioned hatred. One of the things that really just kind of brings chills through my body when I'm working with a couple, especially at the first meeting, is when I sense or I see in a large way contempt of one for the other. That, you know, when spouses are contemptuous of one another, there's an uphill battle. You know, it's not always impossible, but it's so difficult when you see that hatred. And you know, I will fall on my knees when I know they're coming back in for their next session and just pray that God gives me wisdom and gives me patience in dealing with them and opens a door for me to find something that will be a place where they can reconnect and where they can just realize that God is at work in their marriage. But that's a difficult thing. You know, sometimes we see anger doesn't scare me. Couples get angry with one another. But when you see just disrespect and contempt, that's very sad.
What have you experienced with children as far as dealing with divorce and their struggles?
It's heartbreaking. You know, children want their parents to stay married. Even when there's abuse, they want their parents to stay married. And so the change is, you know, when a family takes that, gets on that path toward divorce, it's very hard on children. And, you know, the statistics are very sobering. It's still, you know, it's been 50% for years and years and years. And for many individuals, I had an adult in my office this week who said that her parents' divorce was a turning point in her life and just was immediately, you know, back as if she was a child speaking and in tears at what that was like for her. So I have a lot to say about that and about what we need to do when that is the path that a couple is taking. You know, we need to keep the kids out of the middle. We need to show and demonstrate respect even for that abusive spouse. Even if they don't have contact with him, we still don't want to slam that other parent because children love their parents and they need to be permitted to love their parents. It might not be safe for them to be in the same room with somebody who's a perpetrator, but that doesn't mean we speak disrespectfully. We don't want to use kids as pawns. We'll see a lot of behavior issues with children as their parents go through the change in family structure, you know, and when you think about it, I mean, the child's life is upended. They may be moving. They may be going to a different school. They may have had both parents in the home at night, and now they have one there, and then they're going back and forth between houses, and finances are impacted. So things that they were once able to do, they no longer can do. And, you know, the parents are stressed, and so a lot of times their fuses are short. But we need to be vigilant in protecting those children from any additional trauma, any additional fallout. There are things that even divorcing couples can do to make sure that the trauma is minimized. They might not be able to erase it, but that they don't add to it. And when one parent speaks ill of the other in the presence of the child, that does great damage. And it is not God pleasing. It just simply isn't. And a child needs to be able to have pictures up of dad in the bedroom they have at mom's house, and vice versa. They need to have the extended family relationships preserved, because grandpa and grandma love those kids too.
Absolutely.
And, you don't want to rock their world any more than you absolutely have to. And so giving them permission to love both their parents, I think, is vital.
You know, this makes me think of my boy. He was probably about 6 at the time. And, you know, so many kids at school have step parents.
Yes.
And so he was telling us at the dinner table about his buddy and how his stepmom was, she was so nice. And then he asked, how come I don't have a stepmom?
Whoa.
So we look at each other. Well, you know, of course it was funny, but it's also sad that it seems like there's more children that are living with step parents than they are with their actual parents.
Well, and you see that extended family gets so huge and complicated as, you know, their stepmom, stepdads, maybe there's 2 or 3, and siblings and all of that, and keeping it straight, you know, at school is really a challenge. But yeah, and those children have so much to balance, you know.
With just about a minute left, what about older children? We've been talking about younger children, but I would say college students and beyond, they're affected as well. Is that right?
They are, definitely. And the older students, you know, sometimes you'll see one extreme or the other behaviorally. Often they might kind of spin out of control, or they might get very hyper-focused on trying to be perfectionistic to maybe save their families. But even a college student whose parents gets divorced, it impacts them, and they grieve it. They grieve the loss of their parents. Even if it was always, you know, they had a life in conflict, they still grieve the change in that family structure. My own parents divorced after 35 years of marriage. So I was a mom, and it was really something to wrestle with. And my sister was in college at the time, and it was extremely difficult for her. It broke her heart. She thought she could save my parents' marriage. And because there's such an age difference between us, my brother and I had seen a different side of their relationship, and we, I guess, accepted the end more readily than she did. And it was heartbreaking for her.
All right. Well, you're listening to Faith and Family here on KFUO. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back from our break, we're going to hear about more ways that Christian counseling can be so helpful for families. Now, remember that we want you, our listeners, to also be a part of this show. Give us a call or email your questions. You can call 800-730-2727. You can email your comments to family@kfuo.org, hoping that we can hear from some of our listeners, possibly with an issue that you've had, or maybe you can tell us a story about how you've experienced difficulty in your marriage and seeked counseling where it helped. So please do that and come on with the show, and we would be happy to have you. We're talking with Marty Lindfedt, a Christian counselor here in St. Louis. You're listening to KFUO. This is Faith and Family. We'll be back very shortly.
Welcome back to Faith and Family here at KFUO. I'm Liz Hoffman. Before we jump back into our discussion, I want to let our listeners know about a conference for Lutherans in southern Minnesota. It's called Vine and Branches 2013, and it's coming up April 13th. It's at the Trinity Lutheran Church in Brewster, Minnesota. You can check out their website, vineandbranches.org, and that's vineandbranches.org, no spaces. Also, coming up next week on Faith and Family, your kids are at home from school on their spring break, but what in the world are you supposed to do to keep them occupied? We'll have some great ideas of spring activities that will get their minds working, and it won't cost you a lot of money. We'll also be talking about encouraging your kids to give their technological devices a break, and teaching your kids that Easter is more than just candy and chocolate Easter bunnies. So be sure to tune in with us next week, 11 o'clock Central Time on Faith and Family. Okay, we've been talking with Christian counselor Marty Lindfedt about the state of the family in the 21st century. And listeners, you are encouraged to join in on the conversation. 314-505-7839, email family at kfuo.org. I was just sent an email here that we have listeners this morning from 17 countries, including Malaysia, Sweden, and France. We also have 33 states in the United States, including Tucson, Arizona, Seattle, Washington, and Nashville, Tennessee. So we thank you all for listening. And we do have a question here that's come in on email. It says to Marty, what can a family do with a loved one who is suffering from compulsive behavior problems, knowing that this person is in counseling? How can they relate to this person in a useful way?
Oh, that's a very good question. If the person is already in counseling, you do want to support them in their the work that they're doing with their counselor, encourage them. It doesn't specify, I don't think, what types of compulsive behaviors that the family member is engaged in. But the family members can ask, how can I help you? What is there anything in, there's a lot of compulsive behaviors. It might be compulsive gambling. It might be compulsive washing. But is there anything in the environment here that maybe is a temptation for you? What can we do in our home to make sure that it supports your stability and the improvement as you master these compulsive behaviors? So you want to look at not putting temptation in their way, things like that.
That's great advice. We also have a caller that just came in. This is James. James, thank you so much for joining Faith and Family. Where are you calling from today?
Thank you for having me. I'm calling from St. Louis.
Wonderful. Do you have a question or comment for Marty?
Yes, I do. I have a question for Miss Marty, Sister Marty. I'd like to know some strategies for dealing with rejection, and I'd like to know how helpful is the mental health first aid training for lay people. And the reason why I ask those two questions is because you stated earlier that culture intrudes on families, causing stress. And I was trying to find out what are some of the coping skills for a Christian in culture when dealing with rejection, whether it's from your community or from your faith family community, being that we're in a very diverse living standard, pluralistic system, is our Christian liberty threatened from change from the outside, where we're dealing with a lot of rejection in our families and Christian community families?
If I'm understanding the thread through that, it sounds like you're addressing the sense of rejection or experiencing rejection because of your Christian faith?
With some friends who have a different living standard, there are some changing things going on in the culture.
Okay.
And they were once members of the church, and now they're having some difficulties dealing with their family members and their faith family. But that was the general question. I guess the specific question was this: how I can give them some strategies to deal with the rejection, and how helpful is the mental health first aid training for people.
Well, one of the things that I think is important that you have some people that you can turn to for support when you do feel a sense of rejection, and that you know that you can, you know, to make sure that you stay connected to your faith community, those who are, you know, not rejecting you, and to pray about it. You know, rejection, because we're human beings, most of us feel emotional hurt when we're rejected, and we wonder why. And so sometimes it's really helpful to be able to process that and then to pull back and recognize oftentimes they might be rejecting you or your faith because of what is going on within their family system, and it might not necessarily be about you. So we want to make sure we're lifting them up in prayer as well, and praying for them, even though they might be rejecting us. That doesn't necessarily mean you keep putting yourself in the path of that rejection. You know, so you might take a time out. You might even ask if you feel like you can have a conversation with the person who is doing the rejecting behavior. You know, maybe it's me, but I kind of feel some distance from you. I feel like you're pulling away from me. Is there anything I can do differently, or can I pray for you differently? And, you know, kind of go to them with the extension of kind of the olive branch first. And then if they continue to reject you, you might find that you need to sort of protect yourself. And, you know, with regard to the mental health first aid training, I'm not really sure I know what it is you're talking about there.
Yeah, there's a, you know, that CPR, and there are other first aid trainings
that are
being given here in the state of Missouri, and I think nationally there is a move to train regular service providers and regular people on mental health first aid training to make them aware of some of the baselines or behaviors so that they could be aware of those things and network people to proper counseling.
Okay. Well, if the goal is to network people to proper counseling, I think for us to be educated, for the general population to be educated about mental health issues is a good thing. For us to understand what the, for example, what might be the warning signs we should be alert to when somebody's suicidal, and then point them to appropriate care is a good thing. But I was a little nervous as you were describing that it might mean applying first aid and not being trained to do so, and that can be dangerous. You know, mental health, to offer clinical skills or clinical help when you're not really licensed to do that could get you in trouble with the state. So, you know, there's I probably would want to read and study a little bit more about what you're talking about.
Yeah, excuse me. There's a big movement for that because we're on the front lines. Just as my friend, I mean, I know that he's suffering outside of our Christian family, and the rejection. I guess the being a Christian in culture is what he's dealing with.
Okay.
And trying to deal with the changes from outside of the culture.
Yes.
and dealing with the traditions within his faith family community. And since he talks to me, I'd like to know some strategies about dealing with that rejection. And I was wondering, because I'm trained in the mental health first aid, how would I network him?
Well, it sounds like you already are supporting him, and so in talking with him and praying for him, I think that's very important. If his faith community is changing in a way that doesn't reflect what he believes, maybe he needs to be looking for a place where he can be a part of a faith community that does is consistent and congruent with his beliefs, because feeling like you're outside and floundering is very difficult. And, you know, the cultural, we started the hour talking about the difficulties with regard to culture, and that's a huge obstacle. So I would commend your friend for being consistent with his faith and for having a passion to stay true to what he believes. And I would want to point him maybe to another faith community that will be support what his beliefs are.
James, we thank you so much for calling in. We have another question here. This is an email from Kay. She's from St. Louis. And she read something recent in an article. And it says, the most recent George Barna research said that the leading influences in America society is no longer the church, but movies, television, the internet, books, music, public policy and law, and the family. Now that the church is no longer a leading influence, how can it be more effectively partner with the home to reach and equip individuals and their families for Christ?
Oh, my goodness. What a big question. I think, you know, even as we complain about some of the things that we face because of culture, we recognize, I mean, this is a radio station. We recognize that there's an opportunity as we take advantage of some of the technology to use it to the glory of God. So I think that's really important, that programs like this, that radio stations like KFUO are functioning, and that they're supported, and that, you know, that there are blogs that reflect Christian ideals. That's very important. Being, brave enough, as James was talking about, to stand in faith and face, the change in culture, and to, invest in your faith community, to invest in your church. So that perhaps that tide can turn yet again, because, you know, we our churches are places where we worship God, where we're fed the scriptures, and where we grow in community, and we, you know, we want them to be families and places where nuclear families are supported through the things of God. So, making sure that we don't get off track with that, I think, is very important.
Absolutely. Would you, by chance, have a story of a couple that maybe was planning a divorce or considering that, but then their marriage was turned around thanks to Christian counseling?
I've worked with a lot of couples who have come in thinking that they would plan, having gone to the lawyer. Matter of fact, yes, I have one couple where, oh my goodness, they came in and it was like the fur was flying. And they had filed for divorce. And there was, you know, just heightened emotions in the room, you know, anger, yelling. That's when I feel sorry for the people in the suites down the hall from me. You know, but one of the things that God has blessed me with is an ability to listen to loud noises and yelling and screaming, and I don't run from the room. So, you know, we can bring them down to calm and try to get to the heart of what their discussion is, and then recognize that because they have strong beliefs and they believe that their marriage was ordained by God, that they were brought together by God, we get back to that. And, you know, it meant taking a look at some of the behaviors that had been very toxic and recognizing that they were not God-pleasing. Teaching, you know, actually teaching different behaviors, replacing those negative behaviors with behaviors that were respectful, even if they were disagreeing about something. How do we have a disagreement respectfully? How do we heal some of the woundedness because we have, you know, we've jabbed at each other verbally and we've called each other names and one of us actually left, you know? And so having a place for that in the room and praying, that God would be present and that he would give a soft place to land for those difficult, painful emotions, that he would provide through his scriptures the guidance and the blessing through his son's blood, the healing that we all need every day. I've watched this couple come in from, you know, sitting as far as they can away from one another, to now the divorce filing has been rescinded, and that we're still working together in therapy, but they're speaking with one another, they're doing things together with their children. One of them had actually moved out and they've moved back in together, and we're still in process, but they have committed to their marriage, and they recognize that, you know, without Christ giving us the tools to do the work, we can't do it by ourselves. You know, we hurt each other over and over again, and, you know, we do stupid things, but God gives us this incredible model of selfless love, through Christ and through his faithfulness to us. So those are the things that we have to keep turning to, is the tools that God's put in front of us, with regard to, how to lower the decibels of some of it's really practical stuff, you know.
Right.
Lower the tone of your voice. When you put your finger in your husband's face when he's trying to make a point, he stops listening to you. When you get up and tower over your wife and use that big booming voice, she cowers in her chair. And guess what? It's hard to love that behavior, you know, really is. And so, okay, so when you first met, I bet you didn't scream at her once. No, you were busy, you know, kind of wooing her. So let's figure out what was going on then. And what did you like about him that you went out a second time?
Right.
You know, because it's still in there. You know, you might have had a lot of bumps and bruises. You might have had maybe you have financial problems. Maybe one of your kids has a serious illness. But the person God created you to be is still in there, even underneath all of the stuff that our lives piles on top of us.
Well, what a blessing to have people like you to try to keep this all together for us. That's wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
What about premarital counseling? Do you feel like if the church possibly put a little more emphasis on that, maybe we wouldn't have the issues?
I think that the church is seriously can be a wonderful partner in premarital counseling, and should be, and a lot of our Lutheran churches require it, but we can do more. You know, there are a lot of programs out there that actually require couples to spend more time preparing to be married, you know, not only getting to know one another and setting the wedding date, but preparing for life as a healthy couple. Looking at their finances, I think we mentioned that, but how do we communicate? What are the things, you know, knowing your own body with regard to what are the things in my body that tell me that I'm not happy or that I'm stressed or that you're making me mad, you know, because it happens. And then monitoring my own response so that my response doesn't push my husband away.
Is it difficult that despite counseling a couple that sometimes maybe they don't follow your advice, they go through with a divorce?
Yeah,
and you feel it's...
It is. Sometimes it's heartbreaking. Sometimes I confess, I say thank God, because sometimes it means somebody is not going to be physically harmed. But most of the time, it's really heartbreaking. It brings a grief to... The counselors do counseling because they have a passion for it. They have a heart for it. And so you don't ever want to see a family come apart.
Absolutely. Well, let's maybe turn the tables a little and I guess, look at the bright side of things. Maybe you got some ideas for families to keep their marriage happy, to keep their relationships healthy within the whole family, for a healthy home
life. Absolutely. Well, I'm really intrigued with what you've got coming up next week, because you've talked about some of the things that you can do with kids. And I think couples need to nurture their marriage, and they need to have fun together. And I think that's really, really important, that we enjoy one another, that we recognize that we should have a spirit of joy, and that the joy that we have comes from Christ, and that he puts people in our lives to complete us, to fulfill us, and to make us laugh. And so husbands and wives need to make sure that they are continuing to have dates together. It might be going for a walk. It doesn't have to cost money. You know, it might be running together. It might be sitting down and listening to some music on the radio together, having that communication going, enjoying your life with your children. You know, and that doesn't necessarily mean you're with them 24/7. You know,
right.
Being away from those family members can make you enjoy them more when you come back together. You know, because as kids grow, they develop that autonomy. We need to encourage that, but we want to encourage it in very healthy ways. So, you know, getting out and, you know, taking a bike ride with your husband or with your kids, I think, is a great way where we can rejoice in God's creation, where we can be good stewards of the body that he's given us, because I think stewardship is really important all across the board, body, mind, and soul. So we need to care for our bodies, and to encourage our spouses to care for their bodies. And maybe we should do it together by, you know, going for a bike ride or putting on the rollerblades or something like that.
Maybe family game night.
Family game night. Things, you know, things that don't necessarily cost money that do pull us away from technology. You know, technology can be a wonderful thing, but when you're riding in the car and everybody's got their earbuds in and they're not talking to each other and they're listening to different stations, we are pulling ourselves further and further away from the, you know, the joy that we can share as a family that's connected. And so game night is an excellent thing.
Well, with just a couple minutes left in our show, I know time seems to be going by very quickly today. Where would you see Christian counseling going as far as the future? Where is it heading?
Well, you know, Christian counseling, I think, is getting more and more respect among the clinical world, and I think that's excellent. When I first became a counselor, there was a lot of, I think, scrutiny with regard to those who were Christian clinicians, that they were not properly trained, which is not true. And so I see doors opening in ways where they weren't before, where you can hang a shingle that says, you know, I'm a clinically trained Christian counselor, and the secular master's programs don't have the same resistance that they did at one time to the fact that, you know, Christian counselors can have very good clinical skills. I see the Christian counseling, I'm a member of the American Association of Christian Counseling, and they go all over the world helping address very difficult needs, you know, sex trafficking and, you know, the effects of natural disasters and things of that nature. And so it's going all over the world, and what a blessing to be able to, you know, to spread God's word and help people strengthen marriages, strengthen families, heal from wounds, and just live more healthy lives. And I think that's kind of the whole thing with regard to Christian counseling, is we need to be be good stewards of what God has given us in body, mind, and soul, and be as healthy as we can so that we can profess Christ.
Wonderful. Well, Marty Linfett, we thank you so much for being a part of the show.
Thank you for having me.
You've given some wonderful advice, and I hope that our listeners will take heed of that advice.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. You're listening to Faith and Family here on KFUO. And remember, next week we're going to be talking about what to do with your kids when they're on spring break. Maybe get them to put that cell phone down, and encouraging your kids to I guess, understand that Easter is more than just about candy and chocolate Easter bunnies. We thank you so much for joining us today on Faith and Family. Remember, you can call in or email us your questions or comments, even for next week's show. You can do that by calling 800-730-2727 or at any time, family@kfuo.org. Send us an email there, and we'll be happy to address that next week on our show. Once again, we thank you so much for joining us. We were talking with Christian counselor Marty Lindvedt about the state of the family in the 21st century, and we just appreciate all of our listeners and also all the people that joined in on the conversation today. Looking forward to talking with you again next week here on Faith and Family. Make it a great weekend.